press the record button. That makes sense, right? Wicked. How do we start? You guys always start with the very chill Chinese music, and then a frog call.
Yes.
So, Hirol, can you do an imitation of a frog call?
It's a very shy frog.
Tom, the only frog
Tom,
here.
Can you do a frog? Excellent.
That's one of those sort of digging, crawling around in the field from frogs. Eh?
Yeah, I was thinking of like, yeah, the purple frog type cool. Oh. I don't know if that's what they sound like, but that's how I perceive them. Yeah. Maybe sound. I don't know.
Does it matter?
Anyone who listens to our podcast will know I don't know any frog calls. So ask me to do one on the spot is actually impossible for me because there's not a single one that I have in my database. Most of the times we guess it's not even a real frog. So, yeah.
Well, okay, good. I'm glad that I got all you guys to make a frog call. I'm not going to do one now. I believe, what do we do? We do, hello and welcome to the Squalmates crossover.
Herpetological highlights.
Herp highlights type of thing. Hello, you're listening to the, I'm Dr. Mark D. Schertz. I'm the curator for herpetology at the Natural History Museum of Denmark. And I'm joined today by three lovely people. We'll start with Hirol.
Hi, I'm Hirol Naik. Snake ecologist and conservationist from South Africa.
Excellent. And then on the other side of us, not the usual gents, but instead...
Hello, I'm Dr. Tom Major. I'm a postdoctoral research fellow at Bournemouth University and one of the hosts of the Herpetological Highlights podcast.
And I'm Ben Marshall, the other host of Herpetological Highlights and a current PhD student at the University of Stirling.
Wonderful. It's such a pleasure to be joined by you guys and to see you in the flesh. And so you listeners are either seeing this on our YouTube channel, which hello, or possibly listening to it on the Herpetological Highlights channel or the Squalmates podcast channel, where we have similar interests and approaches to the world of herpetology. And we are here at the World Congress of Herpetology in Kuching, Malaysia, on the island of Borneo, which is f***ing bonkers. So I don't know how dirty your feet is clean, right? You don't use the adult.
That would be the first swear word, but we can beep it. Don't worry about it.
We'll bleep it.
Yeah,
we'll bleep it.
Yeah,
sorry.
It's no big deal. Yeah.
All right. So okay, I'll clean it up.
Yeah. You, Mark, you potty mouth. Yeah. How can you?
Oh yeah. Well. Yeah. Anyway. So cool. Yeah. It's very good to meet you guys in person and to hang out here at the World Congress. Yeah. Have you guys been to a World Congress before?
No, absolutely not. Never even been close to one.
Nor me, no. First World Congress, and likewise, it's really cool to meet you guys. Obviously, yeah, Mark, particularly, we've been communicating online.
Whinging about errors.
No, so nice. You used to send us loads of emails about corrections, and I was like, why don't you send us emails anymore, Mark? But as it turns out, it's probably because we're better at representing science, so maybe that shows an improvement.
Fewer mistakes. That's not the word I was usually used, but for your podcast sake, I'll say mistakes.
Erroneous. Okay, yeah. Okay, well, that's very, very, very kind. Excellent. Yeah, in all seriousness, it's super cool. Like, you came over and said hi, and I was like, yeah, it's Mark Schertz, it's real life, and Hirol. Yeah, so nice to meet you. And obviously, we were together in a symposium yesterday, although, I didn't manage to catch your talk, so I had another one. It was a whole thing, but yeah. It's been awesome to meet you guys and to meet so many other herpetologists who I only knew by name. You know, you're walking around and you've read their papers and you like look at the little name badge and you're like, oh, cool. Like,
totally.
It's you. Yeah. And get a chance to actually say hello and talk to them about their science, which has been really, really nice.
Yeah. And Hirol, you've been at the last one, right?
Yeah, this is my third one.
Your third? So, you were in China.
So this has been great because I've been catching up with a lot of people since 8 years ago, which is pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, we were just talking about this the other day, like how important these meetings are for meeting people, like, as you say, Tom, like seeing people in three dimensions that you've only ever seen as a single line on the co-authored paper, the co-author list is just super weird. But also, I mean, so Hirol and I met for the first time at the World Congress in Dunedin in New Zealand. And that was, first of all, an amazing congress, like the second, like in the top two conferences I've ever been to, and was just spectacular. And I made such good friends. You knew many of the people already, but I didn't know any of them before, and just wonderful.
Yeah, many new people though.
New
Zealand's a long way to travel for a lot of people. Yeah. So we had a lot of Aussies. So I got to meet a bunch of Aussies, which is pretty great.
Yeah. And here has been like a bit more I don't know. There are more people here than last time. So last time it was 900-ish delegates.
And what are we now? This is 1,400.
1,400.
Which is a crazy amount. I when I walked in, honestly, like, I was overwhelmed. I was like, first of all, how can there be this many herpetologists? Also, I've never been to an international conference. I've never been to a multi-day conference.
Oh, really?
And, you know, like,
oh,
herpetologists, we're not always the most, like, gregarious people. So I think a lot of people were sort of just standing there in stunned silence, like, oh, my God. Yeah, hello. But, yeah, it was really awesome.
I agree with that judgment.
Do you think so?
Having been in Janine,
Mark, I mean, you're one of the most gregarious human beings I've ever met. Yeah.
It has an on switch and an off switch, and it's turned on when it's the right group of people, and it's off most of the time. That's how I maintain mental health.
Yeah.
What little mental health I've got. I think also, so from apparently about the venue, like, that room doesn't have capacity for all of the delegates at the show, like at the conference. It doesn't have 1,400 seats. So we've never seen the assembled true attendance of the
That does explain conference. Why I keep coming across people and I'm like, how have I not seen you for multiple days prior? Like, I've been here the whole time. I haven't left. Well, I have left. I went to sleep. But, like, I've been here every day and there's still new people I'm bumping into that I know from other things.
Yeah.
1,400's a lot.
Yeah. 1,400 people is a lot of people. It's bonkers. And yeah, I mean, so we are on day four.
Yeah, Thursday. I know, it's flown.
Tomorrow's the last day.
Yeah.
So yeah, for as you've never been, neither of you have ever been, what are your overall impressions of this most significant and the greatest assemblage of herpetologists of the world?
I'm going to just carry on with the overwhelmed theme, to be frank.
Yeah.
Because there's been so many talks that I've wanted to see and not been able to because there's so many concurrent sessions. And also, I feel like I'm not the best for, like, introducing myself to things. So having everyone see your talk is my sort of go-to when going to conferences.
Yeah.
And having the concurrent sessions, I know so many people haven't seen my talk, so I don't have that in. And that's been a little bit tricky to sort of get over. But at the same time, there's been wonderful choice. So every talk I've seen has been kind of awesome. So
maybe that's worth mentioning. So if you haven't been here, you don't know. It's bonkers. We've got 14 concurrent sessions, which is too many concurrent sessions, frankly. Like, at a lot of organizational kerfuffles that have made for some very interesting sessions. But yeah, it's just a lot. It's a lot of people, and every time you go, picking up from what you said about, like, who is where, and there were a lot of Aussies at the Dunedin meeting. I think almost as many, not quite as many Aussies at this meeting, because you know, we're in Borneo, it's not that far from Australia, but whenever you're here, like, now we've got, I think, certainly more Americans than there were at the last meeting, and the proportion of, I've seen more African delegates than at the last meeting as well, which I was kind of surprised about. But then, I mean, Dunedin is one of the hardest places. Like, I looked at the map for the Dunedin meeting and it physically could not be further in the world from Germany. Like, it is the furthest land point from where I was in Germany that exists.
It would have been quicker to tunnel through.
Literally.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Shorter.
Yeah.
Completely,
it is all downhill.
Yeah. And then it's very uphill. But yeah, like, it's so crazy to see that different representation. And so yesterday there was a poll. I don't know if you guys were at the big meeting.
Didn't see that.
At each of the World Congresses, there are bids for the next meeting. So at the last meeting, it was between three places. I think it was Berlin, Germany, Kuching, Malaysia, and there was a third one. I can't remember which that one was. But in any case, it wound up being Kuching that people voted for, and it was, well, Kuching where we have wound up being. But yesterday, it was between Nairobi, Kenya, and somewhere in northwestern Spain. And so by show of hands, and the way this is decided is not by the popular vote, but is actually by the committee, but by a show of hands at the thing, Nairobi won by a landslide, to my perception. They said in the thing that it wasn't that clear, but it seemed extremely clear to me.
Likely Nairobi.
So it may well be Nairobi next time in 4 years. And I've heard varying opinions. Like, should it be more frequent? Should it be less frequent? Like,
wow. Well, 4 years is a long time. And just quickly before I answer that question, I just want to say I've been loving the World Congress because you asked what it's we thought awesome. About it. And it's so fun. Like, yeah. It's so nice to be here. Yeah, so many cool talks. You can just walk into a random room. Like you said, there's like 14 concurrent sessions. Walk into a room. Sometimes you don't know what's going on. You bowl in and it's just somebody talking about cool reptile amphibian science. Maybe you've never heard of them, never heard of their work. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, cool. This is like a researcher I could potentially tap up for a collaboration or whatever it might be.
Definitely.
In terms of Nairobi, I mean, yeah, that would be cool. Slightly less distance to travel. I only arrived on a Sunday night before the conference, so like I'm still not sleeping. I'm like extremely jet lagged.
Well, what I found is actually, as a herper, the jet lag from the European area is perfect, because at 3 o'clock in the morning when you get back from herping is the normal time you'd be good, because that's 9 o'clock in the evening for you.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
There
so
is that.
It's perfect.
If I was herping, like, I mean, the next week I'm going to be herping like hardcore full time. I will be staying up all night until it gets light some of those days, probably most of those days, and it will be perfect then. But like here, I'm like, I've got to give a presentation. Like, I could do with like more than 2 to 3 hours sleep. It would be kind of nice. But
I have had multiple 4 hour sleep nights in the last week.
Yeah, same here. But you know, I'm not complaining. I mean, it's cool. And we're in Borneo. Yeah, I probably wouldn't have been in Borneo otherwise. When I was booking my flights, I was like, to work, I was like, is it cool if I like book my flight a week later and come back and like do some, stay around and do some herping? And they were just like, well, yeah.
Like, duh.
We're going to Borneo for a week,
are
you idiot. Yeah. So that was nice. I haven't actually done much herping.
Yeah.
Have you guys, since you've been here, been herping?
Yeah, I spent 1 week in Mulu National Park with the team from Berlin. So a huge shout out to the whole team from Berlin. We were 11 people, which is a lot of herpers.
You guys
on
rolled
one
deep.
Pile. Yeah, it was very, very cool. But then a lot of people photographing every animal. We saw some extremely cool animals, so I was very happy with that experience. And I arrived a day early, so I also had like a calm evening with just one more person, which was really cool. So, and yeah, and then 2 days ago I went to Kuba National Park, which is just outside Kuching, and that was really wicked. Have you had a chance at all?
Not much, but I'm staying a week after, so I've got some opportunities.
Where are you going for the week?
No idea. See where the wind takes me.
Fair enough.
I get all the insights from everyone else.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, it's been like when I went to Kuba, that was during the week, that was on Tuesday, and there were at least 40 herpers there on the hill.
Yeah.
Some scientists, like people that I know, some just here basically for the herping and then tagging along to the conference, and just, it's amazing. It's so like, I love it because I'm one of the generation who grew up on the internet. And so seeing these people who I only know from the internet in the flesh is like, these are my people. This is my home. I was sitting at lunch yesterday with two people, and somehow we got talking to things other than herpetology, and just like, we started talking about Magic the Gathering and Dungeons and Dragons. I'm not a magic player, but I am big into D&D. And so one of the guys was like, I have my dice with me. And like, I was like, where's the DMG? Let's do one. So like, not only are these my people, but they're my people on multiple levels. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't done much herping. Like, I went out last night, just not like crazy, just like for a few hours, and we saw a few Dendrolaphus pyxis, which are snakes, so I was happy.
Yeah, I mean,
they seem to be the snake that everyone's seeing. Like, people were coming out and saying like, yeah,
those are bronzebacks, right? Yeah. So I've seen also quite a few of them.
Yeah,
they curl up so sweetly in the trees, and then you just spot them as this little like coil,
and they're counter shading of like a white belly, which serves them so well in the day, absolutely does them over at night, because it's there's a white thing.
Yeah, bright white.
Yeah, there it is. You really can't miss them. It was cool. We saw like one in a tree. I'm here with a Bangor student called Harry, and he spotted a snake, and I was like, we can't have Harry be the only person to spot a snake, so suddenly we all switched on, and then spotted a couple. I'm like insanely competitive, but you know, with herping, it's like a lot of your like status in the group is predicated on how many snakes you can spot, right? I don't know if it's the same with you guys and your friends, but like, we're extremely
it's not just you, because I'm also like, I'm not doing it intentionally to be competitive,
no,
but I do want to be the first person who sees a frog.
Yes.
Like, and also I want to at least see things that are significant, that like make it feel like I belong, especially when I'm surrounded by other like hardcore herpers. I'm like, I have to see something worthwhile, otherwise I have failed as a person. And so on this one night, we...
This is sort of just imposter syndrome that never goes away.
It never goes away.
Yeah, you have to prove yourself somehow.
It doesn't
somehow.
Go away. No, exactly.
I think that's a good thing for your listeners to hear, even Mark Schertz. The imposter syndrome remains. Yeah.
Well,
and certainly for me, it's never gone anywhere.
Certainly true. And I did have this beautiful moment where the curator of herpetology at Berlin, Berlin Museum für Naturkunde, drink, if you're a long-time listener of the show, I use German, so you have to drink. the curator for herpetology in Berlin, which is Marc-Oliver Rüdel, we were out looking for things, and I found a frog in the rain, and I caught the frog, and then Mark, we were looking at the frog, and Mo turned to me and was like, you should be a frog researcher. And I was like, validation. It really is like, yeah, there is something like very special about being surrounded by these people and then being like, oh, that's really cool.
Thinking back, so we met in Madagascar.
Yes, that's true.
I
was in charge at the time.
Exactly.
It's very weird.
And
very
so
weird.
I have one of those weird, like a compliment you gave me, which has stuck with me.
I don't remember it.
Yeah, so catching...
less significant for Mark, this compliment. But here we go.
This is a sort of point.
It was a time.
It was catching a little Gecolepus and catching it without shedding any scales.
That's very impressive.
And having this little guy totally perfect in hand. And yeah, I remember that compliment specifically for the lack of scale drop.
I mean, you...
So there you go.
I mean, that's a very good for my ego to feel like that made a positive impact on you.
Well, that's all I'm bringing out. Yeah,
that's lovely.
It's passing on that love, you know?
Yeah. What a time it was. I mean, gosh, that was a long time ago. 2012.
What was this trip? You were in Madagascar together? Where was I?
I was the herp.
Before I knew either of you, but still being left out. Herald, what was going on?
Well, it was 2012. What were you doing in 2012 in the summer?
So 2012 summer, I was in Croatia at a festival probably.
Well, that answers the question.
Partying hard.
Those of us who were working hard were in Mahavelu in the south of Madagascar with terrible water. I got the worst food poisoning of my life. I nearly died of malaria. No, it wasn't malaria, but it was the food poisoning. It was really, really awful. I actually had giardia. Oof. And then the cure for giardia is to eat raw garlic. So I ate what is it called? A foot of garlic? Head. Yeah. Head?
Yeah.
A head of garlic. Head after head of garlic in order to cure it. So I was sweating garlic. I smelled like garlic for weeks afterward. And it didn't help. Metronidazole is actually the cure. And then someone had metro and it was like, okay, it's actually gone now.
Garlic worth a go.
Garlic was worth a go. I love garlic, but that was that was on the much side. Anyway, no. So I was the field officer for herpetology for Operation Wallacea at the time, and Ben had not yet been exposed to the he was one of the student researchers mm-hmm. who came along on that thing, and you were one of the more senior researchers, right? Or were you one of the
base level peasant?
I actually have a photo of you sitting on a rock, like, yeah,
staring at lizards
because yeah. I had to come up with some kind of project, and so I like had them out there doing ethograms of a pleurus,
yeah,
which could in principle have been a useful thing to do if it had been in the hands of someone who was competent,
yeah.
But I was also a bachelor student at the time, so
it's all a bit bumbly.
I'd been to Madagascar many times before, so I got roped into this, but it was, I mean, that was a great trip. It was really cool, and what a place. And you know, I know that, like, south of Madagascar is not representative. You have to come again and see the rest.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
Yeah.
Motivation is there.
It's a different thing. This morning's plenary talk was by Saivi on the reptiles of the Arabian Peninsula. And I was like, that's actually more similar to southern Madagascar than what most people think of when they think about Madagascar, which is like rainforesty things. Yeah. So, yeah. But Saivi Karanza, I don't know if you were there for the plenary talk this morning, but it was brilliant. He's
superb.
He's awesome. Anyway, like, I was going to say, so what one thing that I really admire about your podcast, which is going to sound now very self-congratulatory when you guys cost-list this onto your podcast.
We like that, though. We're all about that. Self-promotion, aggrandization. No,
this is to do with what you said, Tom, about like just going into a random talk and sitting down and listening. I don't have the capacity for that. Like, I don't have an infinite capacity for fascination with things. Like, I have a very specific field of interest. And if your talk is not on my field of interest, I'm walking out. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I could do that. I could totally... wing it.
That's good. You need to suggest more papers for us to talk about on the show, because I'm mostly like, oh, evolutionary genomics, cool, let's do this paper. And then we do a lot of evolutionary genomics papers, yeah, and
which
then
is something
like,
I don't understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. No. We have a good balance.
You're just there like, yeah, cool, Mark.
Yeah.
Sweet. So,
well,
he's getting excited. You like that. Like, it's nice to see him happy, isn't it? Yeah. Look at him now. It's great.
It is good. I mean, I think, you know, it is my opportunity to talk with people who aren't and go to talks that I would not typically choose. And I have really enjoyed that. And like, what you learn is that even though people you can identify with very closely in terms of like the stuff that they do. So like Haral, you and I, for instance, like we get along really, really well. But like going to your talk, it's like, wow, this is so far from my normal field, is super interesting. And I can see why people are engaged in it, but it's like not a paper that I would typically read. So I would read it to talk about it on the show. Mm-hmm. And you guys do that all the time. So it must be like such a, in terms of breadth of the kind of research experience that you guys are getting, it's much broader than like, because I usually just get it into the papers that I would normally read anyway, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, at least for me personally, like I would really, prior to doing the podcast, I struggled to sit down and read stuff. Like I would not be like, finding it to read it, like if I knew about it, I'd read it, but like I wouldn't, I'm not somebody who like subscribes to specific journals and gets their like updates and notifications and I'm like, cool, okay, this has come out. So for me, that having that impetus to read stuff, and then also like
so it's important.
Yeah, and I'm always also so grateful for the community for showing us stuff. Like
yeah, I mean, that's kind of the point of what we were trying to highlight in our talk and just sort of generally being here is the feedback back and how big this community is and how sort of rich it is, like just knowledge wise and experience wise is outrageous.
So can I get you guys to talk about your, because you guys gave a talk about podcasts, like your podcast specifically, and you had a poster, like poster, huge props to you, Ben, for that incredibly beautiful poster design, like far and away the most beautiful poster that there's been at the whole conference.
Means a lot. Thank you.
Very blue and red vibes, like blue and what color is the other one?
Yeah, it's like it's purpley, like an orangey purple.
Yeah.
We like Vice City colors, you know, like 80s.
It is very 80s much neon. 80s. Yeah. Definitely got that vibe to it.
Yeah.
Can you guys talk about like what has the reception been and you know, I don't know. I missed your talk, unfortunately. There was one at the same time.
Have you already spoken, right, as well? Or is your talk tomorrow?
No, I talked yesterday.
Yeah, I missed mine. I'm
so,
sorry,
good.
Yeah. This is what I mean. Like, everyone I'm trying to see, I'm just, like, letting down.
Yeah, they've got a lot of really great people talking at the same time.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, it is tough.
Up
yeah.
to 14 at the same time, which is rough.
But, in terms of the reception, it was really nice, actually. Yeah, like, we did, like, a sort of mini live episode where we did, like...
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we did, like, a frog call. The audience had an opportunity to try and guess it. None of them got it. Ha! Yeah, so we're not idiots. Yeah, I was actually quite gratifying that none of these, like some of whom were like distinguished herpetologists.
I want to know what it is. Do you have the audio file? I want to try.
Okay. Will you get the same clue?
Yeah.
So local species.
A local species.
Yeah. Okay, let me see. Let me see if I can. Here we go. Okay. It's quite quiet. I don't know if you're. It's not that. There's a like proper frog comes in. You wait with bated breath.
That's the chick, chick, chick.
Yeah.
Is it Chaparina fusca?
No.
Okay. Wait a second.
I don't even know if that's close.
You said that with such confidence.
That was good conviction. So. And it was like, it was impressive conviction, actually.
Yeah.
Is it? Okay. Is it a Rachophorid?
I don't know.
working with the pros here.
I don't think. Oh no, Rachophorid's trees and
tree.
No, this is something
in the leaf litter.
This is a filthy
so
ground.
It's a microhylid.
I think so. Yeah, I'm not 100%. I could actually find out. I probably got it. Amphibia web thing right here.
I don't think it was a micro-hylid because I remember you saying that it wasn't when...
If it's not a micro-hylid.
I have amphibia web in the pocket of my...
So, it's not a micro-hylid.
Okay, it's a dicroglossid.
Dicroglossid? Is it Feyerwaria?
No. And actually, somebody guessed that. A Bangor student, another Bangor student, Harry Wood Smith, guessed that. Chris Harry, that's a good guess.
Okay. Is it Oxidozyga?
Yes.
Okay.
I had to check because the taxonomy is inconsistent here. But yes. The man you're asking doesn't really know the frog.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So it's an Oxidozyga, which are puddle frogs.
Yes.
And it would be, is it Cuba puddle frog or something like that?
No.
No.
I'll give you a, do you want a little clue? Because I feel like you've got closer than probably either of us have ever got.
Well, I got to have multiple guesses.
Okay. Yeah. It's,
I got to rule things
it's
out.
It's Levis. It's Smooth Boy. I've just told you.
Smooth one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wicked. Oxidozyga Levis.
Yeah. So it's a yellow bellied puddle frog.
Yeah. So if you're not familiar with puddle frogs in general, you have to look them up because they're hilarious. They look so weird. Heads on top, eyes on top, very puddly boys.
They're kind of like the sort of Enhydrus of frogs, right? The little like googly-eyed water guys.
Googly-eyed water guys. Wicked. I mean, that's a super cool thing to do. So
and
how
I'm
was
really
the rest of the
that
sesh?
You're narrowing down of that.
Okay,
let's
so
not just pass that
let
by.
Me, let me explain this. So some time ago, Tom Kiyoshi, who's also here, shout out to Tom, he used to work for NABU, an organization in Germany who have a partnership in Indonesia. And they produce an absolutely phenomenally beautiful field guide, actually two field guides to the frogs of, I believe it's Java. It might be another island. The whole things are in Indonesian. He sent me two copies of each of these books, one of which I put into the museum library at the Naturalist Museum in Denmark, and the other ones I kept for me, and my son has used them as bedtime reading for some time. And so I have been teaching him how to identify Southeast Asian frogs, and through that, I have become very familiar with the genus-level taxonomy of Southeast Asian frogs. So I can identify most of the things to genus level now, thanks to this thing. And my son, who is 2.5.
I was going
to
say, like, how old is this son? Like, that's really impressive.
My 2.5-year-old can identify sticky frogs, what we call stinky frogs, which is formerly the genus Odorana, which I think is now Chalcorana or Hylorana, depending. He can do Megophryids all the Megophryid groups, puddle frogs, he knows the common name so far. I haven't dared to try to get him to learn like Pelobatrachidae and whatever. So it's
he's
like,
2.5.
He's 2.5. You know. It's hard to get your tiny. He speaks 3 languages, so you know it's hard to get your
Can
mind
I be
around
your son?
Those. Well, the poor child is then going to a daycare where they find it really weird that he's constantly picking up snails and
the
stuff.
Other children are sort of muggles compared.
Yeah, exactly. Literally. Anyway, all right. This is a huge tangent. That was very fun. We don't have that much time left. We've already gone long. So what I would like to know is like what your general... I've met some fans of yours to whom I've then proselytized about my own podcast because it feels like...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
like, where are your stickers?
Yeah.
We didn't think about stickers.
Yeah, I like to think of it as like, you know how you have like multiple shops that sell the same thing in the same place and like it forms an enclave? That's our podcast.
Some sort of shopping enclave. Okay.
All right. Okay.
I thought that was a perfect analogy. It wasn't that well received.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't get it.
Let's move on. What were you going to ask us about our podcast? Let's talk about us. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about you. How's the reception been? How do you find like people are responding pretty well? Have you had lots of people who are like, oh, I didn't know there are herpetological podcasts? Or has it mostly been fans?
I would say we've had a surprising number of fans. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you...
Yeah, yeah.
For me, it's been extremely gratifying. I see people walk, because we don't put our faces out there that much, so people sort of walk past and see the... Yeah, this is what them. I look like.
That's what they look like. I knew what you looked like, but I didn't know what you looked like.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, I was
You know, we've had a reasonable number of people come past and see the name and be like, hey, yeah, you guys, like, it's really nice. Yeah. And honestly, they have been such cool, well-adjusted members of society, which is also really nice to see. Yeah.
You're beautiful. We love you. Hello.
Have you guys had a similar experience?
No. I don't think anyone...
Nobody knows about us. Nobody watches the Squadmates podcast or listens to the Squadmates podcast.
I had in my head that you were the more popular podcast, to be honest.
I try not to.
Same. No, that's not true. There are good reasons for that, which is partly consistency. What were you going to say? I'll let you finish your thought.
I don't think that many people know that I'm on a podcast.
You are a fairly recent addition.
I am.
So they might not have caught that we're back.
Yes.
Because we're back. Hello.
After a while.
It's been some time. And so, yeah, we've been very bad at doing consistency. You guys just had like 200 episodes. Is that right? You just hit 200?
Yeah.
We just hit 27.
Yeah.
27. Yes.
Well, congratulations on 27.
And we've been doing it for just as long as you have. So our rate is 10 times lower, but I think our quality is not 10 times lower. I've had several people walk up to me, but I think I've had as many people say things about the podcast as I have about Tumblr.
Oh, okay.
Because, yeah, Tumblr. Hello, Tumblr. Yeah. So, like, people know us from social media.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And also from... the Global Women and Herpetology Network, they know you, right, as well? Many things.
Yeah. I don't know if they know. I co-host a podcast.
Yeah. You need to get it out there.
I do.
Yeah.
I've just been busy, man.
Yeah.
This is the thing, isn't it?
Like, you've got like a PhD or something going on. God.
I know, right?
Rubbish.
That's the thing. Like, it's just, it's all a side project. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, I think.
Mostly I have people be like, how do you have more hours in your day than I do? And I'm like, I sleep less than you do, probably.
Yeah. I don't know, though. Like, I don't know. I don't know how you guys find it, but like, yeah. The podcast, I think people think it's more time consuming than it is. Like,
it's very time consuming.
It's very time consuming.
It's very time consuming.
Oh, it's so time consuming.
So time consuming. Oh, God, do nothing else. Yeah. No, I mean, for me personally, I just wake up on like a morning because I'm somebody who I don't do anything until it's like the last possible second it can be done. So I wake up the morning we're going to record.
I don't know anybody like that.
Yeah. I wake up the morning we're going to record early. I read for like between 2 and 2.5 hours and make notes. And then we just blast out the recording. And so it's probably like total effort 3.5, 4 hours. And we do two at once.
It's probably closer to four because we end up then you organize the next one and you find the papers for the next one and that like so you never leave a session without having
the
next one.
And you guys also pay for an editor.
That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That saves
we don't do
so much time.
Yeah, it's a time suck. Definitely.
Do you listen? You have to listen to the whole episode then while you're editing.
I do it three times.
Three times?
Yeah.
Okay.
And our episodes are really long. So so it's making podcasts is very difficult if you do it all by yourself. Yeah. But
kudos though, like that's really impressive. Like,
well, it's a passion project. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I struggle sometimes to get things produced on time, which will come as no surprise to our listeners. But you guys have got a regular schedule going on, which is pretty good.
Reasonably. Yeah. Reasonably. There's been some patches of dead air, but that's mainly because
We PhDs had a patch of dead air for a year and a half.
It's not been that bad.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so. We've had a few times where it's gone like a few weeks, like if we're traveling or someone gets ill. We generally try and...
We also have four people and three time zones to deal with, which is also quite difficult.
The extra time zone must be next level because this guy is like an international jet setter. It's a little bit ridiculous. Like, he can't live in one country for any length of time, whereas this little bee just in like the UK constantly.
That's visa problems, dude. If people give longer visas, I'll stay in the same place for longer.
So yeah, the first thing to do when organizing a podcast is just check which time zone Ben's going to be in.
Yeah, I mean, this is also true. If dear listener, you're interested in doing your own podcast, I would recommend finding someone who lives closer to you than 6 hours, seven hours time distance.
I mean, we started in the same place, to be
fair.
Yeah,
you did.
So that helped.
Yeah.
I think it was like our first 5 or 10 episodes. We were actually in my flat in Menai Bridge where I lived in Wales, surrounded by my pet snakes and my very loud fridge because I lived in one room.
Hey, you didn't have a cocky frog calling in the background, which we had for most of the first 14 episodes.
I hate egotistical frogs. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very cocky. Gosh, I think we'll have to strike that one. God, that's a really bad pun, and I didn't make it, which is very upsetting. anyway, so no, I mean it's been really good to hang out with you guys and to meet you guys in person. And also, this is the first time Harol and I are like recording in person.
Oh,
actually,
cool.
Were you on the drunken recording?
Was.
You were, yeah. So Kari is also here. Shout out to Kari. Yeah. We had an excellent in one of our first episodes. It was recorded. like there was a bit that I recorded because I had my recorder with me in Dunedin, where you can listen to a drunken conversation about the World Congress in Dunedin between myself, I was not drunk, but myself, Hiral, and Ed Kari. And was there anyone else? It was just the three of us. Anyway, that was a legendary night. That was a really, really good time. But I mean, the World Congress is an amazing event. It brings people together. It's such an important and exciting thing for us to do. So it's been super, super nice podcasting with you guys.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for suggesting it. And yeah, great to meet you guys in person. And yeah, it's just been great. So
yeah,
hopefully
sometime we have to go herping together.
I would really like to see you identify frogs in real life, having seen you identify them from their calls alone. That would be great. Yeah.
Just by process of elimination.
And I hope that if we're ever in your neck of the woods, Hiral, that we could see you at work as well. That'd be really cool. Yeah.
We all have to come to South Africa and go, especially looking for Brediceps.
Yes.
Rain frogs. Yeah. Excellent. So, I don't know, how do you guys end your shows? You guys are usually talking about a species that's been described. We don't have any species to describe or to talk about now, although I've whinged that they haven't done any of my frogs before.
We've done some of your papers, though, because we were discussing this.
Okay.
We were like, have we really not covered
that? That's true.
Blowing animals.
And huge props to you guys for being probably the only people I've ever heard talk about it who actually properly understood the difference between fluorescence and luminescence and what it means when the things are fluorescing. Like,
successfully tricked everyone.
Yeah, I mean, but it really makes a big difference because there are people who publish papers on it who still haven't understood. So
What can I just very quickly on that note before we go, do you think there's a reason that they have that?
Oh, actually, no, I'm happy to say that I don't think that there's a reason that they do that. I think that there are cases. So recently there was a publication, maybe insert the citation here if I can find it, where they found, so you guys heard about our second fluorescence paper of the gecko from Namibia, Pachydactylus rangii, which has these amazing fluorescence along the flanks, under the chin, and around the eye. And that turns out to have been, if anybody was at Salvi Carranza's talk this morning, you would have seen geckos from Oman that have exactly the same pattern of light stripe. Those things are also fluorescent. There was just a paper that published that there's like multiple different instances, convergent fluorescent, same color, and therefore almost certainly the same mechanism. And those things all desert adapted. So function in that case, in most cases, for the amphibians, for the reptiles, I think the vast majority of cases, it's coincidental. I'd be happy to go on the record and say that.
We did just cover a snake paper that was suggesting it was connected to, aposematism for certain birds, maybe?
Yeah, doubtful. No, they'd have to have incredibly, incredibly good green-blue color vision, we argued about this in the paper in the chameleon thing, but since then I've really changed my mind. I think in the chameleons, it's also kind of a coincidence. For the geckos, that's a much harder argument. I think something's going on there. In fact, I would say someone needs to do these tests, but I think in Pachydactylus rangii, at least, the fluorescence is bright enough, strong enough, that you can see it without a UV light. You can see it under white or daylight, because the sides of the body look yellowish, which I think is actually fluorescence. It's not actually that yellow color. So someone needs to do those tests. And then those other geckos that are convergently doing the same, it looks like the same mechanism. If so, probably also related to the iridophores, and therefore probably also some kind of functional thing. Communication, I'm more doubtful about. I don't think it's probably communication. I would rather think that it is a cancer protection mechanism against high UV environments where you've got a lot of UV blasting on these things. And instead of absorbing UV light, these things are converting that UV light into visible wavelengths, which are less carcinogenic. That would be my very strong alternative hypothesis that someone needs to, we need to have more behavioral tests on these things. Someone needs to apply sunscreen to them, because I think that would be really cool.
Yeah.
If you block the UV, what happens? Do they start communicating the same way? Just block the UV in some way to see how it changes their behavior. That would be really cool to do. And someone needs to do it.
I'm so glad I asked. That was really cool.
It's a really interesting study. And I think there's a lot more to do there. We had a whole thing going on, but it's kind of been interrupted by various wars at the moment. So unfortunately, our current work on that topic is kind of stalled. But hopefully in the future, there will be revisiting of this. For now, it's going to go on the back burner for at least 5 or 6 years. But I think it'll come back. Or other people can please be my guest, at least my guest. Like, I can't speak for my co-authors on those papers. But from my perspective, I'd be very happy if other people enter that field, because I think it's really an interesting thing that people need to do.
Cool. Well, I think in terms of when it goes out on our podcast, where can people find your podcast?
Yeah, you can go to squadmatespod.com. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can find us on Spotify. We are also releasing video on YouTube, so you can go watch this episode on YouTube and see our beautiful and awkward faces. With a very small Bornean earless monitor in the background, Lanthanotis, the dream species that I think only one or two people from the conference have managed to see during their trip here. Someone found a Gastrophrenoides last night in Baku. In Cuba, which is amazing little microhylid that is super, super rare. So I'm super jealous. That was also Tom Kershey. So again, shout out to him. So you can find us at Squadmates Pod all over the internet. We are on all of the socials. You can find us wherever you can, where most people listen to podcasts. And then you can, how about you guys? Where can one find you?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much the same, all the podcast apps. We're called Herpetological Highlights. Spotify. We are on YouTube now, aren't we?
Intermittently.
Oh.
It's a thing.
We're all against that.
Technological limitations.
Spotify.
Making our way over there.
Yeah, slowly.
Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you know, all the other ones.
All the things. Herpetological Highlights. You're at Herp Highlights on Twitter, right?
Yes. Although we are witheringly poor at all kinds of social media, so.
Yes. Well, we're also not very good at that. And then at the individual level, Hirol, where can one find you on the internet?
I am at Hirol's Hive on Instagram. Best place to find.
Okay, you can, how about Tom? How about you?
I'm on Twitter at Thomas_Major.
Excellent.
I think my Twitter is Ben_M_Marshall?
Don't have the question mark. You can find me at Mark Shirts on all the things, MarkShertz. I always have to spell it out because nobody knows how to spell shirts. Thanks for joining. And I don't know if you guys want to join us in a Hukuna Squamata?
Yeah, okay.
As we say on the show, Hukuna Squamata!